The Senate will please come to order. House bills on first reading. House Bill 71, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 71, Emergency Fire Suppression Account, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee and Act relating to public lands and fire suppression. Pass the House on third reading, I-60.
House Bill 71 is assigned to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. House Bill 111, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 111, Board of Land Commissioners Conservation Easements, sponsored by Representative Samuelson, an act relating to state lands. Pass the House on third reading, I-60.
House Bill 111 is assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 8, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 8, Election Code Revision, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to elections. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1.
House Bill 8 is assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 9, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 9, Campaign Finance Reporting, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to campaign finance reporting. Pass the House on an amended form on third reading, ayes 58, noes 2.
House Bill 9 is assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 86, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 86, Reverse 9/11 Emergency System, sponsored by Representative Brown, an act relating to local governments. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 86 is assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 59, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 59, TANF Amendments, sponsored by Representative Martin, and Act relating to the Personal Opportunities with Employment Responsibilities Program. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 59 is assigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 64, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 64, State Auditor Employee Criminal Background Check, sponsored by Representative Flip, an act relating to the State Auditor. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 64 is assigned to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 31, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 31, Medical Safety Event Reporting, sponsored by the Labor Committee, an act relating to public health and safety. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 31 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. House Bill 38, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 38, Medicaid Provider Reimbursements, sponsored by the Labor Committee, an act relating to Medicaid. Pass the House in an amended form on third reading, ayes 58, noes 1, conflict 1.
House Bill 38 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
February the 18th, 2008, Mr. President, your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 19, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Fecht, Larson, and Vasey, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 19th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 38, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Geis, Hastert, Johnson, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
The motion is to resolve the Senate into Committee of the Whole. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Senator Hastert.
Senator Cooper, you may.
Fellow senators, I'd like to introduce you, if you'd stand up, Brittany Davis, who is our high school intern from Cokeville, Wyoming. And if you don't know where Cokeville at, it's about 10 miles from the Idaho border and about 3 miles from the Utah border. And it's most famously known for the school bombing there. Anyway, this is where...
For the what?
This is Brittany Davis. I'd like you to welcome her.
I don't want to come out of your place.
Senator Massey.
Yeah, privilege at the floor.
Yes.
There's a lot of folks here watching us, and I think most of them are nurses who are here for the for their Nurses Day when they come over here to Cheyenne and work with each other and have a conference during the day, and then they come down and visit us here in the afternoon to talk with us about issues. And from a note that I got passed into me, a lot of them are from the University of Wyoming as well. But it doesn't matter. All the nurses, if you would stand, and if we can convey our appreciation.
Welcome to the Senate. I see we have some up there from Western Wyoming, too, so good to see you.
Does that mean that they could be here?
Any other announcements? Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just go over a couple areas where there are questions asked that we did not have the right answers or complete answers. With respect to the community colleges, the question was asked regarding the contingent reserve account. That is an earmarked revenue flow from coal lease bonuses. There is $3.2 million that's scheduled for the biennium, but because the coal lease bonuses are an annual event, there's only profiled the $1.6 million. The balance be appropriated in the future. Those dollars essentially reserve account for capital major maintenance projects at the university or at the community colleges. With respect to the Department of Tourism, the question was, what is the number of employment? There are 21 employees in that department, and as I explained earlier, we added an additional position to man the tourism facility or the new Welcome Center on I-90 up in the northeast part of the state. The question was asked about the film incentives. I gave you bad information on that. We have not tapped any of those dollars. There was $1 million appropriated in the last biennium. It is carried forward. There was supposed to be in the budget $1 million for each of the fiscal years. We've only appropriated another $1 million so that during the next biennium, 9 and 10 fiscal years, there will be $2 million available for that program as it stands today. So $1 million is carried over. We put in additional $1 million, resulting in $2 million for that program. With respect to Department of Family Services, the question is where did the new four new positions come from? They came from legislative action in 2007, Chapter 209. Those were the adult protective services. Those are the people making sure that you all take good care of your parents. And those were legislative positions. And a lot of these times, you know, the new positions come in through the exception process because they weren't brought into the standard budget. With that in mind, Mr. Chairman, I move Section 70 to the Budget Enhanced Oil Recovery Commission. This is a new program that we had started up for enhanced oil recovery. There is a footnote. If you're looking at your cheat sheets, you should be now at page 12. If you're looking at your budget, you should be looking at page 37. You'll see at page 37 there's a new footnote that's been added by the GAC to this these funds. Of these funds, the operating dollars are the $448,000. The balance, the $5 million plus, are dollars put into the Section 600, which are intended to be grants. The concern that we had is that when we saw the utilization of these funds, it begins to look less like a grant process where researchers would go to an entity or a company and say, here is the project. We'd like you to fund it at X amount of dollars. You contract to those dollars, and then somebody monitors the private entity, or in this case, the commission monitors the success and the project. It begins to look more like a general appropriation to one of the departments in the Department of Engineering, School of Energy Resources. So we wanted to make sure that this commission has the capacity to oversee the funding, that the commission is driving the mission of the funding. So we want to make sure that all grant request approval have to go through the commission. The commission will be approving it to make it so that in essence, the university is not saying, here's how we're going to spend our research dollars, and then take it to the commission and said, here's where the money expended. So we just want to make sure that it is more like a grant. I stand for questions if there are any. If not, I call for the question.
Any questions on Section 70? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 70 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Section 70 is adopted. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 72, the Budget Retirement System, and turn it over to Senator Meyer for explanation.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the budget on the retirement system is relatively straightforward. There are relatively few exception requests. There was one that the governor did reduce that having to do with some contract consulting services. The retirement board is going to try to live within that decrease of what they're what they wanted. They wanted $533,897. The governor gave them $313,890. It was a 31% increase, but these were consultants that the department uses about every 5 years to do some in-depth studies. So they hope they can get the job done with that. If not, I'm sure we'll hear from them in the supplemental. Relatively straightforward. I would call your attention to, when we get to it, Section 314. That is a study that we requested be done about the retirement system, and also draw the body's attention to some good work done by the Management Audit Committee. There's a management audit report on that. I think everybody should read that. Having to do with some of the things that we have to do as far as COLAs. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will say that I have attended some retirement meetings and that they are starting to address some of the concerns that both we had and I believe Management Audit had in meeting their projections as far as income. And stand to answer any questions as far as any detail. All in all, we're in pretty good shape. We're just not able to do our COLAs in the big systems. Everybody else is in pretty good shape. So if there's anything specific, I certainly stand to answer those questions or get information for any member. Thank you.
Any discussion? Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to talk a little bit about the big plan, the retirement plan. It deserves discussion because it's a big dollar amount out there. Based upon the present level of contributions, the plan can only grant out about 1.5% cost of living increases each year. What that means is if your inflation is hitting 3% or 2.5% and you're only getting 1.5% COLAs, you're not going to keep up with inflation. So you retire today and 20 years from now, you're going to have the complaints that we hear from retirees now that, hey, I retired back when it was a low dollar. Our cost of living increases are not keeping pace. There was proposal floating around that we fund the could make a general fund contribution in the order of about $40 million to increase the corpus of the retirement plan so that we could fund higher cost of living increases. This deserves a lot of attention, and it is something that we ought to be taking a look at. When you look at the level of contributions made by public employees and other states, our contribution levels at 11.5% are generally pretty low. It's our comparators are more like 12-13%. But that doesn't mean that the state contributes the entire amount. And the discussion ought to be had, for example, should we be contributing another 2-3% now so that the cost of living increases can be maintained as you go along? And then a valid question is, who contributes that? Right now, the fund is structured so there's 11.5% contributed for employees. 5.25% is contributed mandatory by the state, the employer. The other 5.25% is an employee contribution, but the state of Wyoming has been appropriating those employee contributions now going on for a significant amount of time. So we're paying the employee's contribution. And a legitimate question is should we increase the contribution level by another 2-3% and even require the employees to take something out of their paycheck? Now, if they do it, obviously current employees don't like that. But part of the retirement plan where you have a defined benefit plan that we have, part of it is that you're paying not only for your own retirement, but for the rest of the plan people. And so it is something that deserves and needs attention, interim study. It'll be brought up, I assume, by management council, but it's a big deal. It's big dollars and needs some attention. With any other questions, and then we'll call for the question.
Any questions on Section 72, seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that we adopt Section 72 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Section 72 is passed.
Chairman, I move Section 80 to the Budget Department of Corrections and turn it over to Senator Job for the explanation. Just a small...
Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go back and answer a few questions again before I go on with this agency. I've had distributed two or three more pieces of information for you today. The first is on WyoLink, and seems to be some misunderstanding, at least on my part, about the tower status. And if you would look down toward the end of the page, it says WyoLink and tower status. It's fairly clear that the Wyoming Transportation Commission funded 57 towers, and there are 11 scheduled for completion in 2008 and 3 additional towers yet to be determined. So that's the newest information I have on the tower status. I think the bottom paragraph is fairly interesting, too. It says, for your information, funding sources to date for WyoLink, $42 million of state general fund appropriations for the infrastructure, dispatch centers, T1 lines, frequencies, civil work, $19.8 million from the Wyoming Transportation Commission for the towers and equipment and the pilot project, federal homeland security funds in the governor's office of $21.8 million to local jurisdictions and $2.2 to the state infrastructure build-out. And fellow senators, I would guarantee that's not everything that we have spent on this project, because you see radios and different things in many of our agency budgets. So I guess I have a question for anybody who might know about WyoLink more than I do, which could be just about everybody. I'd like to know who's accountable if this goes up and it doesn't work. I would, because you can see some of it coming. Mr. Chairman, I've also handed out on the Department of Corrections two pieces of information. One talks about their positions and their vacancies and explains that in pretty good detail. And the other one, you can see where they, in their 12 extra positions, how they've converted temporary or AWAC or part-time positions to those full-time positions. So if you have further questions on that, you can ask me later. And because I've passed out so many pieces of information today, right before adjournment, we're all taking a little quiz modeled after PAWS, so you know how those school kids feel, to see if you're really reading this. Okay, on the Department of Corrections budget, we really made no changes to the... Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. President.
And I apologize, Senator Joe, but I'd like to go back to WyoLink. And if you add it up, coming either through general fund or the Highway Commission's budget, that's $61 million that didn't go to roads, that didn't go to safety, that didn't go to improvements of any kind for a system that the one time that I know of that they tried it, which happened to be here in Albany County, or there in Albany County. Where's Albany County? That way. Wherever it is, and it probably moved while we weren't looking. But understand, when the Department of Transportation comes to you, it says we need $61 million to put up a system that the one time they tried to do it, tried to make it work, it didn't work. As a matter of fact, they were out hunting for a person that was dangerous. And those guys were trying to use their cell phones, and a rancher in the area had two sheep herders out there, each with a band of sheep, and they had better communication than what WyoLink provided. In addition to that, if you go back and read the original WyoLink proposal, WyDOT said that they would provide the towers through existing resources, and that simply isn't what's happened. Now, we're under a lot of pressure to put extra money into WyDOT. And I agree with my colleague from Sweetwater County. It's pretty hard to tell where the money's going to go or whether there is any accountability at all. And I do happen, just, you know, being kind of an old pack rat, I've got the original WyoLink proposal in my office, and you're welcome to come look at it. But, I guess speaking of WyoDOT, somehow we took a wrong turn. And it's a very, very expensive wrong turn. And it's going to get more expensive. If you take the area down here, yes, it's rough. But it's nothing compared to statewide coverages, particularly in the northeast corner of the state, where it really is, you know, the mountains and canyons and big cities and all that stuff. So it is a concern, and $61 million worth of wrong direction is substantial. And I hope the Appropriations Committee will act accordingly or whatever. Either that or don't trust on WyoLink if you're stuck out there somewhere, because probably the tower either isn't up or there's no permit from the Forest Service, or you're better off with a cell phone. And that's a sad commentary after $61 million.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a sad commentary. The But we did make inquiry into this, including after the Albany County incident, we met with the stakeholders in the WildLink program, including the principal proprietary firm, their representative that's gaining most of the revenues from this. The way it stands now, we have $48.5 million allocated principally Homeland Security grant money to go that's out there. Now, that money does not represent, for example, all of the money that's going to be required to convert handheld sets at local communities. I thought originally that this was also going to pay the cost for some of the,
portable radios?
No, dispatcher centers. The dispatchers, there may be more dollars at the dispatchers that need to be spent. What we do know is there's $11.5 million remaining that have not been expended. And that is the purpose for putting the footnote on the governor's budget that says that none of the 11.5 is going to be spent or is at least going to be directed toward making sure the system operates. We received an explanation that the system wasn't going to be, the switch on the whole system was not being thrown on until February, March of this year, so it was not, in essence, operable. And it was explained to us that there was a reason why it was not working in the Albany County area, and that problem will be solved when the system goes online in February and March. Let's hope, given the amount of investment, I really hope it does work. It's supposed to be the new state of the art, but we're seeing other ramifications. I know that our senator from Cheyenne is going to propose some amendments talking about getting tower sites even within communities, because we're also finding, for example, if you want to get emergency service or the radio to work in this building with all the concrete, you've got to have another antenna that you don't have. And the local municipalities sometimes your Board of Public Utilities don't want to give tower sites unless we pay for them. They sure like the mineral royalty grants we give out. They like all the revenues that we flow through. But they're not going to allow us to add additional site facilities. And so we'll have an opportunity to discuss that. But, Mr. President, that's the best I can give to you. We've spent a lot of money. We've got a lot of more money to spend to make it, and we're trying to keep our eye on it.
Senator Peterson.
Of the WildLink project, I think we senators shouldn't throw up our hands before this project is off the ground and going. We had an impressive demonstration, at least it was impressive to me. Some of you might think that's typical for me, that I can be easily impressed, but nonetheless, we were talking from Lyman, from the Capitol here in room 302 to Torrington area and to the canyon where the incident happened last year, and the communication was as clear as a bell. So let's give this program a chance, and let's get these towers up, and let's see how it works around the state. I think it's money well invested.
Okay. Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need to address one more question that came my way this morning. The State Trust Lands Office is going to provide information on the creep in their operations budget, and so the tall senator from Natrona County will get an answer to his question as well. Okay, back to the Department of Corrections. You could tell from this agency's presentation that the agency director and the governor and the budget office had done a lot of work on their budget. So we made no changes at all into the governor's recommendations other than adding a footnote to the department to report to the interim committee on any transfers of 100 series, which deals with personnel, any series funding appropriated for the department. So they do report back to us on their personnel, and they are the only agency that we did that to. The two pages that I handed out to you really do give you a lot of detail. We, as a legislature, put $46 million into expanding our corrections facilities. And most of the requests that we discussed during the agency's hearing were due to those expansions. We needed additional corrections officers. We needed programming people. We needed supplies and materials for a lot of the programs that we want them to offer so that there's a better chance that these inmates won't be coming back upon release. A lot of it also relates to highly and quickly increasing numbers in the community of inmates on probation and parole, and the need to track those folks, especially in intensive supervision, and see what they're doing and making sure in most cases that they stay out of trouble. The director of DOC also did a lot of work trying to reallocate positions within his department to where they are needed most. And I think he did that with about 22 positions, mostly getting them into offender management, so there is that supervision in our institutions and outside. One piece of information we received, that in Torrington, where they're building the new prison, they've spent $23 million to date and had only one change order. And in the end, we added 12 positions to this department, but like I said, they were temporary, part-time, and they were converted to full-time positions. We also gave them a substantial amount of money to try to recruit for all the vacancies they have. During the agency hearing at that point, they had 115 vacancies. 52 of them were at the state prison, and the handout that I gave you explains that they have several coming on now and going directly into the academy for their training. Torrington is scheduled to come on board in January of 2010. And that medium corrections prison at that point will deal with a lot of our substance abuse and mental health problems and other special targeted inmate problems that we do have. We have a lot of mentally ill people in prison, and we're getting to have a larger and larger geriatric population that needs some specialized care, and a lot of it will happen there. One piece of information I'd like to give you, because we've had so much conversation about mental health and substance abuse, in addition to what we put into our own Department of Health, this agency budgets about $12 million for substance abuse and mental health treatment and management within our correctional facilities. So that's another sizable chunk going into a problem that seems to plague Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, with that, I would answer any questions about this budget.
Any questions for Senator Jobe? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question, to what degree does the Department of Corrections have the ability during this biennium to make switches or changes in positions to fill other needs? For instance, we, as a Judiciary Committee, have been looking at alternatives to just building more prisons, i.e. the probation and parole bill that went through this this body will now be moving on to the Senate. In terms of, we know that we're having difficulty filling positions in Rollins and so forth, but when we start going from 40 individuals in ISP, intensive supervised probation, to perhaps 700 individuals, is there flexibility enough to move some of those positions to deal with that increased caseload that you may have for your probation officers?
Senator Jobe.
Mr. Chairman, I do know that during the agency hearing that the director of this department had reallocated folks within his department that were already approved full-time positions. So I think there is some flexibility there. I'm not sure. I'd have to check on what might limit that ability, because I don't know the answer to that.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chairman, that part of that topic is addressed in the footnote number 1 at the bottom of 39, where we say that because there are a number of vacancies in the Department of Corrections, because, for example, they have not filled all their vacancies at Rollins, or their positions at Rollins, they've had recruitment problems, then the question is can they use either both the positions and those fundings for other purposes? And so what we did is said, and there are a number of things that they can do to move dollars around, but what we were not wanting them to do is to take, for example, 25 vacancies that we've allocated to run Rollins on the basis that the penitentiary needs new positions and switch them to a new program. Through the B-11 process, they can move dollars, but we would generally be reluctant to have them move vacancies that are designed to operate the prison to another division of the Department of Corrections, such as parole, knowing those are permanent moves. Because if they surrender them out of if they're coming to us and say these vacancies are not necessary, we'll take them out. If they say that, well, it's a temporary thing, then fair enough. If they want to take positions from one department and move them to the other, that's a B-11 process. But we have great concerns using vacancies that are out there on the representation that they are understaffed at some of these institutions, and then to utilize those vacancies to fund expansion for the simple reason that if, in fact, the vacancies aren't necessary, we'll take them out. So there are vacancies there, an enormous amount. The 100 footnote, the 100 series footnote is intended to make sure we keep an eye on those. If they want a B-11 positions that are permanent, fair enough. But if they come back and say, now we want new positions to backfill, we ought to say no.
Any further questions? Senator Jobe.
Chairman, and I would just add, when we're talking about positions in the Department of Corrections, that they have several positions set aside that they're not touching now because of the new prison in Torrington. And I think the executive branch is sitting on those, but when that gets closer to being opened, we will see a lot of those come online and in the numbers.
Any further questions, Senator Burns?
I think when we're talking about getting rid of some of these positions in Rollins, I think we should provide some context. The Judiciary Committee has toured the facility in Rollins a number of times, and I recommend it to anybody who goes down there. One of the things that's most striking is you'll go into an entire wing of the penitentiary that's closed. No prisoners, no nothing, because they don't have the staff to man it. So, and it's just sitting there collecting dust. So the idea of permanently pulling positions out of there, frankly, makes no sense to me at all. The JAC's chair's position is a good logical one, but when you put it in the context of having the facility that we've paid millions of dollars for sitting there, and just because of lack of recruitment, we cannot fill that penitentiary. I think it points to a serious problem that we have, and I think it's more serious than just juggling FTEs around on a budget database.
Senator Jobe.
That wing is empty right now, and they are working very hard with some of the positions you see on this handout to get that bed open. They have hired 36 positions that have been vacant for 21 months, and they are supposed to go to that 160-bed facility and get that open, the expansion at the Wyoming State Prison. In addition, we did give them $1.09 million, I believe, for recruitment to get those positions filled and to take care of the inmates that we have.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, in addition to that, we authorized them, or we sort of consented to their B-11ing some of the 100 series dollars out to sign up contracts for rental units so that as they recruit people, they would have rental facilities available. In essence, they guaranteed them. We've done a number of things with the 100 series, and absolutely, we want these positions filled. And that's the point, that we don't want these vacancies either or taken out to utilize for other purposes. They're there for a purpose.
Any further questions on Section 80? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 80 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, Section 80 has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. That takes us to Section 81. I move that section, Border Patrol. or Board of Parole and turn it off.
It's a long day.
We're good there. And Senator Job's going to do the explanation with the proper enunciation.
Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I almost lost this. This is a very small agency and has a budget of $1.7 million, and we took no action on the governor's recommendation. So it stayed as it came to us.
Are there any questions on Section 81? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 81, Board of Parole, please say aye. Those opposed, Section 81 has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 85, Wyoming Business Council. Turn it over to Senator Townsend for explanation.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Wyoming Business Council has a budget of $141.8 million. $132 million of that is from general fund, and reserve fund is $7.8 million. Federal funds and 1.8 special revenue. Now, under the Wyoming Economic Development Act, Wyoming Travel and Tourism is being presented as a separate operating budget in Agency 66, which we've already been through, and so they're on their own at this time. Effective July 1st, 2007, the legislature moved the Main Street program from the Department of Agriculture to the Business Council, because the director of the Main Street program is also the director of the Rural Development Council, the Rural Development funding was transferred to the Business Council also. These programs have a budget of $1.4 million, $1.3 from general funds, and $100,000 from the federal funds. Now, they have a very complicated infrastructure. From what I can glean on the information, there's probably 14 different programs that are being administered through the Business Council. There are three board of directors in the whole scheme of things, and it becomes quite complicated when one tries to dig too deep into it. However, the Wyoming Business Council this year submitted 21 exception budgets to the exceptions to their budget, of which the it amounted to about $32,398,000, of which the governor disapproved all of it except $12 million. So a lot of it fell by the wayside at that time. There was also killing field, there was seven full-time employees who were not approved in that. It ended up with, from what I can glean out of the budget, there are 51 employees in the budget at this time. Some noteworthy things we moved, there were some quite a bit of funds moved back and forth, but generally, it came up to a total of $114 million from the general fund, $7.9 million from the federal funds, $1.5 million from other funds, and for a total of $123,484 for the Wyoming Business Council. Thank you.
Any questions for Section 85, Wyoming Business Council? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question with regard to the item under Business Ready Communities, which, as I read it, is general fund of $79.25 million. I see, as I look in the 07 budget, a appropriation of $33.25 million. So this is a major increase, but I think some of that may be one-year funding to two-year funding. I'm not sure. So that's part of my question. What is the increase in the business-ready communities line item over previous biennium?
Uh, Any further questions? Anybody going to handle that? Senator Nicholas?
I'll get that just one second.
That one we can go back to. Senator Nicholas, you want to move forward?
Why don't you move forward and I'll come back.
Any other questions on this section? Senator Scott.
Chairman, while they're looking, and I understand the Business Ready Community is a popular program because it's projects in a number of the communities that we represent. But it looks to me like the program is starting to get extremely large, and I wonder if maybe this is a, I hesitate to use the words pork barrel, but a potential source for perhaps other priorities in the budget and a potential source if we need to make some reductions at some point to make the thing balance. I'm not sure how well justified all these particular projects are, although frankly I don't know what they are.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I want to talk about a couple of those. What I'm looking for is the dollars. It was in the first spreadsheet that we had that's like this on the very first one, and it shows the, if somebody's got it, that we handed out yesterday.
Yes?
The original one. The one before that. Here it is. I got it. Great. On this handout, on the original local government funding handout, on the second page, we show the last year's and this year, so that when you look at the business-ready communities, it looks like we put in about $32 million, I think is correct, in the first year of the biennium, I think in that range, and then we put another $52 million. I'm saying that wrong. The fiscal year 05 was $52 million. The 07-08 total dollars was $85 million. So we put in $37 million in the original legislation, $15 million came through, was community facilities, it's still in the budget, $33 million came in through the supplemental budget. So you're, I guess if you take the community facilities out, you would be $37 million plus $33 is what was funded through it last year. And thank you. With regard to your general question with regard to is this an appropriate amount to put through, and that is a policy decision we need to be making. And we have been looking on the committee at the grants that are being going out. You do see that what kinds of projects get funded from cycle to cycle really depends on what the competition is. So that one competition cycle where you're going after $9 million, if the competition is low, projects get approved that you might say, geez, I don't know. The next budget cycle, you may have 20, 15 good projects, and there's and you at the result is great. So with all these programs, I think we need to, and the message we're trying to send is you don't, just because you have an $85 million appropriation doesn't mean that every cycle you have to put out $9 million. If you don't have $9 million of top-quality projects, then the SLIB board should be postponing the money to later cycles when the competition is there. The program works, I think, best when there is high competition, lots of projects, and the good ones raised to the surface.
If we begin to run out of project and ideas where they're, then we ought to be cutting back the money. I agree with you. But at the same time, we continue to hear that economic development is one of the largest concerns of our constituencies, and so we're trying to balance that. But we do watch that, and we do comment on grants that that are being approved, and I think the message we're trying to send out is get more grants, have more competition. If there's not enough competition, hold the funds till the next cycle.
Senator Townsend.
Yes, we also need to be cognizant of the fact that the governor did remove $20 million out of that business ready community budget initially.
Any further questions on Section 85, Wyoming Business Council? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 85, Wyoming Business Council, to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Section 85 has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I did want to, I forgot to read in the employment levels with the Business Council are 50 or as of February 19th. The council had 50 employees. Main Street had three employees assigned to it. Two employees. Rural Development Council had three, so you have a total of 55 positions that were in that on the 19th. With that in mind, we go to Section 80 or 101, Supreme Court, and I turn it over to Senator Peterson for explanation.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, also, fellow senators, questions were asked yesterday on the Department of Employment. You have a handout on your desk with some of those answers regarding caseload and also the reserve account of the Industrial Accident Fund, what that amount is up to. Along with that, I think the third question was the hearings and the backlog and where they stand there with that backlog. There have been improvements made. At the very bottom on page 5, return customer satisfaction surveys from injured workers for fiscal year 2007 averaged 90.8% satisfied and 9.2% unsatisfied with the service provision. So hopefully that answers those questions that were asked yesterday on the Department of Employment. Supreme Court budget, the JAC, I was happy to report to Mr. Chairman and also to our Senate President that there are two less employees in this division. We have a total of 226 employees now in the Supreme Court. The JAC did move $4.2 million from general funds and one full-time position to the public defender's budget in that 316 section of the bill. I've kind of... line number two is kind of humorous, but questions have been asked here to the JAC, your committee, as we've looked at these budgets, how much scrutiny we used. This next line shows that we are pretty tough on some of these budgets. We denied the court's exception request for $600 for bottled water. We had to tell the Supreme
Rock
Court.
Springs.
From Rock,
in Rock Springs.
In Rock Springs, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's tough. That's tough. So we watched that pretty close. JAC denied the court's exception request for $131,051 from general fund and one full-time position per court recommendation in their budget hearing. This is for a circuit judge in the 4th Judicial District. It had been requested as a result of the 2007 Wyoming Judicial Workload Assessment Study, and that was denied by the Joint Appropriations Committee. Another bottled water, this was in the 9th Judicial District, for $1,000, a little more expensive water there. And then the last thing, the JAC denied the court's exception request for $95,000 out of general funds for the legal needs assessment of the Wyoming State Bar. They felt that a study needed to be made, and JAC disagreed and denied that request for $95,000. So the total amount of the budget is $43,435,187 for the State Supreme Court, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on Section 101? Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I did want to comment with respect to the bottled water. It doesn't mean that the folks can't, on the one hand, I see everybody here walking in and hitting the bottled water tap next door as opposed to taking water out of the tap. So We understand that in many, particularly some of these older buildings, courthouses, you may want bottled water. We do wonder sometimes, why don't you just get a filtration unit? But having said that, how many times have you traveled into the water? The real point here is we think that their budgets are big enough to absorb this. Doesn't mean they can't buy it, just means they have to look to their other parts of their budget to pay for the water.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, could we have a further explanation on footnote number 3, please, where $131,000 was cut and one full-time position for 4th Judicial District, please?
Is somebody going to handle that question? Senator Nicholas.
Your Honor, Your Honor. Switching modes there. You got me. The Mr. Chairman, Your Honor, the when we that was one that the courts themselves withdrew. They were talking expanding an entire court in a system. We were about ready to have a long discussion about if you want to expand a court, do you do it through the appropriations process, or do we send it to the Judiciary Committee for interim study? There is a weighted caseload study out there that suggests that there are some areas that are underutilized. You're also going to see, I don't know if it's going to make it out of the House, but there was a proposal to add a new district court in Sublette County because of the weighted caseload study. Having said that, whether we agree or disagree, it does occur to me that if we're going to act on the weighted caseload study, that it probably ought to go to the Judiciary Committee to really take a look at where the judges are. Do we want a circuit court judge as opposed to a district court judge? Can we handle the matter by shifting caseloads? We tried to make more flexibility with the circuit judges so they could pick up more district court judges. Are judges traveling? All that's legitimate inquiry. And we're just a little reluctant, but in the end, the Supreme Court withdrew the request and made our job easier.
Any further questions on Section 101? Mr. President.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and this question goes to the circuit court budgets. Specifically, where they're hiring what they call professional fees. And that's the category, 901, where they hire their hourly magistrates. And I just picked three at random. This one is the 2nd Judicial District.
Give us a page.
In their budget?
On the Supreme Court budget.
Yes, 72.
Thank you.
And I'll just take the next three to give you some idea of where these budgets are going. It goes from $18,000 to $34,560. I'm just going to go to the next one. It went from $33,120 to $69,000. And the next one, actually this judge did work a little bit, $13,000 to $34,000. Roughly doubling the hourly magistrates that they're hiring. Now, circuit court, the implication, and when that bill was passed, was it was a circuit court. You traveled. And I would suggest to you that these judges are not traveling, that they're hiring hourly magistrates to do their work. And that's why they're doubling the 901 category. And we can go through every one of them. I have yet to find one where it's come in at the same level that it was at the previous biennium. And I just got a question. Are these judges doing what they're supposed to be doing as a circuit court judge? And I picked those three at random. I think I can go in and find one more to the center part of the state where it climbs even higher. My question is, did you visit with, and I think the Supreme Court presents their budget, did you visit with them about why the 901 category is rising exponentially for this coming biennium?
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we did talk to them about it, but if you look at their narrative, the narrative says this is how we calculate it. For example, on page 75, I see that the narrative is that we anticipate 8 hours times $75 times 600 out for the magistrates, and then you have the interpreters down below. The explanation that we received is the real increase they're seeing is in interpreters, that they're getting a lot of folks that are coming into these courts, particularly in some of the areas that are where they're having employment problems, and a lot of the encounters with the court system are with non-English speaking defendants. And it really has increased a burden on their court to have an interpreter there to protect the due process rights of the defendant in those cases. And the testimony was not that it was the magistrates that was driving that. And my assumption was when we heard the testimony is the magistrates were about where they thought. The increases, for example, on this one was about a $3,000 increase, which we believed, or was the testimony, was principally in magistrates. With interpreters. Now, having said that, if one of the premises that you have to think about is if you're going to encourage judges, circuit court judges, to travel, that means that when they're out of their office, somebody's got to cover those hearings. Somebody's got to cover the hourly or the arraignments and things like that. And so the magistrates perform an important function so that as judges travel, there's somebody to backfill for a few hours. So I think there is an important component there. The magistrates do reduce the cost of our permanent employment. But the testimony was interpreters are driving this budget right now.
Any further discussion on Section 101? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 101, Supreme Court's to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Section 101 has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 102, the Board of Law Examiners. That is a budget that is funded by fees collected by the applicants who take the state bar. They requested a $50,000 increase, which is to be covered by bar dues. We approve the increase. Stand for questions. If not, no questions, call for the question.
Any questions for Section 102? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 102 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Section 102 is passed. Senator Nicholas.
That takes us to Section 103, the Judicial Supervisory Commission, for explanation. Turn it over to Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the Judicial Committee on Conduct and Ethics is basically formed by Article 5, Section 6 of the Wyoming Constitution. They're a co-equal branch of the court system, just like the Supreme Court. And the only review actually comes from the legislature, not from either the Supreme Court or the executive position. We did not agree with the particular budget that was set forth by the commission. They came in at, around $341,000, and we knocked it down to $329,000. The difference primarily, Mr. Chairman, was in a difference of $12,243. In an exception request for the executive position there. There's only one person in the commission, and we asked A and I to do a study to find out whether similarly situated people, what they were actually getting paid for in those circumstances, and we found that people with more responsibility as far as people underneath them actually were getting paid around the same. So we felt that as you would if you had the standard 4% increase. So we took the exception budget out of there for the extra salary increase and passed all the exceptions that which they wanted for the other areas. And that primarily is the budget, Mr. Chairman. Any questions I'd stand for.
Is there any questions for Section 103? Any questions on Section 103? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 103, Judicial Supervisory Commission, please say aye. Those opposed? Section 103 has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move multiple sections here to speed this thing along. I'm going to move Section 120, Judicial District 1A, Section 121, Judicial District 1B, Section 122, Judicial District 2A, Section 123, Judicial District 2B, Section 124, Judicial District 3B, Section 125, Judicial District 3A, Section 126, Judicial District 4, Section 127, Judicial District 5A, Section 128, Judicial District 5B, Section 129, Judicial District 6A, Section 130, Judicial District 7A, Section 131, Judicial District 7B, Section 132, Judicial District 9A, Section 133, Judicial District 8A, out of order, Section 134, Judicial District 9B, Section 135, Judicial District 6B, Section 136, Judicial District 8B, Section 317, Laramie County District Court 1C, Section 138, Sweetwater County District Court 3C, Section 139, Natrona County District Court 7C, Section 140, Judicial District 6C, and we'll run it to there, and for an explanation, turn it over to Senator Jobe for discussion.
Senator Jobe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the judicial districts, we only made two changes in the recommendations that came to us, and that was in Section 127 and Section 134. Both of these district court judges had asked for juvenile court case managers to work in the juvenile justice area as pilot projects. We didn't think the money belonged in the judicial system. We moved that money to the Department of Family Services, where the rest of the money for problem-solving courts exists, so they can contract with the courts for those positions and those pilot projects. With that, I would stand for any questions.
Is there any questions for any of these sections? Any questions for any of these sections? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to pass Sections 120, 121, 122, 123, 124, 125, 126, 127, 128, 129, 130, 132, 133, 134, 135, 136, 138, 139, 140, 151, and 157, to adopt those to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Those sections have passed. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, and actually you got a little more aggressive. There's two sections that we didn't talk about. Section 151, District Attorney, Judicial District 1. I'll move that along with two more sections. Section 157, District Attorney, Judicial District 7. Those are the two counties that get their DAs paid for.
Right.
Two big counties. And Section 160, County and Prosecuting Attorneys. And turn that over to Senator Townsend for explanation. I think you had all three, right?
Just
two? Okay, then we'll just give you Section 151 and 157.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The District Number 1, of course, out of Cheyenne, it has a budget of $3,957,000. We made no changes in the recommendations in the court. They have 18 full-time employees and one part-time. Any more questions I'd try to answer?
Any questions on Sections 151 or 157? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Sections 151 and 157 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senator Nicholas, those sections have passed.
Thank you. And then I move Section 160, County and Prosecuting Attorneys, and I'll explain that. You'll recall that this is the program where we reimburse those counties that do not have their DA systems paid for by the state a portion of their prosecuting cost. The base budget was $1.3 million because of legislation we put through last year. The standard budget was ramped up to $5.1 million. They had an exception request of $1.1 million. turning into an appropriation of $6,135,000, and that's to reimburse a portion of the cost of the district attorneys. I'll stand for questions.
Any questions for Section 160? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 160 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, Section 160 has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That takes us to now we're at the budget, page 54. And your cheat sheet at page 18. And I move the Section 167, which is the University of Wyoming Medical Education. This is the program that pays for the WAMI system. It includes the appropriation for the family practice centers in Cheyenne and Casper. There are three new positions that were allowed by the governor that we concurred with. Two of those positions are with the Casper residency program. There is a director of medical education that was added, a senior office associate added. Those dollars to fund that all came out of their 900 series. So we reduced their 900 series, which is the contract series, but added the positions. Then there was a position requested in the WAMI Medical Education for an anatomy professor, a clinical faculty anatomy new position. We funded that. There were salary increases. This is a budget that has seen some substantial increases to support the two family practices as well as the WAMI. We did receive reports on whether or not the increase, you recall we also increased the salary paid to residents that were coming to the program to where we have one of the, for remuneration purposes, we have one of the better programs. We understand that it is working, that we're getting better applicants going both to the family practice centers. They're happy with the results. And there's a corresponding benefit that as these centers get a better reputation, more people are going to them. They get more Medicare reimbursement for services. So they are seeing some, but certainly not enough to offset the increased revenues. Generally, we're paying more for faculty. With respect to the number of students, we expanded the WAMI program to begin ramping up, I think, to 16 is my recollection. We were at 14 last year. They only took in 11 students, leaving some vacancies. There is a general concern as to whether or not we're being a strong enough advocate to get in really what I think are some decent applicants, or whether the University of Washington is saying we'll only take a certain level of applicant and not allow us to fill our positions. If that's going to be the case, the discussion is well, fine, let us go contract those three positions to another medical school. You can take the ones that you want, and we'll take the others that we're happy with. I keep reminded that a lot of the doctors you're being treated with right now that are great physicians went through the early contract system where you could get admitted to Creighton, to Utah, and to Colorado with a 3.2 average at the time, and they're great doctors. But having said that, we're given reasonable assurances that they will begin to take the full amount that number of students that we've asked for, and if they don't, I think if we ought to revisit and say, fine, then we'll lower the appropriation to you and start looking at some other schools that may contract out with us. When we make those threats, we get a reciprocal threat that if you start sending students somewhere else, we'll cut you out of the WAMI program. So we understand it's a sensitive discussion. However, our intent is to get more doctors educated, and we are watching out for that. Stand for questions.
Any questions for Section 167? Senator Scott? No. Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 167 UW Medical Education, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, Section 167 has passed. Senator Nicholas.
This takes us to a very tiny budget, just $1.54 billion. Section 205 Education School Finance, and for an explanation, I turn it over to Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I guess the nice thing about this is that there's no general funds in it. So it's all school foundation, so we're in pretty good shape. The external cost adjustment is in there. We do have the court order placements. There's a mill levy debt package that's also in it. Your foundation specials, that's your school facilitators and instructional facilitators. We also had an educational reform package in there for $38 million. Student performance data systems, that's your 2.5, your I believe that's your YCAS, I think. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, it's for the kids. Thank you.
Any questions for Section 205? Any questions on Section 205? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 205 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Section 205 has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That takes us to Section 211, Board of Equalization. And for an explanation, I turn it over to Senator Joe.
I couldn't resist, John.
Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the Board of Equalization, we made no changes to the recommendations. They have a budget of $1.845 million, and the only thing they had asked for was some extra money to lease space on a virtual server anyway. So that would be my explanation, and I'd answer any questions.
Any questions on Section 211? Senator Nicholas?
No.
Oh. Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 211 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Section 211 has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move Section 220, Environmental Quality Council. For an explanation, I turn it over to Senator Townsend.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you. The Environmental Quality Council has a budget of $742,000. It's interesting to note that $559,000 of that budget is 100 COVID or personnel. About 95% or $95,000 is support of those. And then the interesting point about it is they are increasing their amount of 900s because they're using the Office of Administrative Hearing more and more to help them with their duties.
Any questions on Section 220? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 220 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Section 220 has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, and I move Section 270, Administrative Hearings. For an explanation, turn it over to Senator Peterson.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 270, Administrative Hearings, pretty straightforward. JAC took all of the governor's recommendations on this budget. It stands at $3,273,968 with 10 employees. This is the agency that hears the cases of workers' comp, small claims, driver's licenses, so on and so forth. Workload has increased. The thing that stuck out in this budget was the perhaps what they asked for was the new state employee, a new examiner, and the agency would find that funding from from their contractors' budget in their own budget. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, that is basically the budget of the Administrative Hearings. And I stand for any questions.
Are there any questions for Section 270? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 270 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Section 270 is passed. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm going to move multiple sections now. I move Section 012, Board of Architects. Section 13, Wyoming Youth in Asia Certification Board. Section 16, Barber Examiners Board. Section 17, Radiologic Technology Board. Section 18, Real Estate Commission. Section 19, Professional Teaching Standards Board. Section 22, Respiratory Care Practitioners Board. Section 28, Board of Registry in Podiatry. Section 30, Board of Chiropractors Examiners. Section 31, Collection Agency Board. Section 33, Board of Cosmetology. Section 34, Board of Dental Examiners. Section 35, Board of Embalmers. Section 38, Paramutual Commission. Section 52, Medical Licensing Board. Section 54, Board of Nursing. Section 56, Board of Optometry. Section 58, Board of Speech Pathologist and Audiologist. Section 59, Board of Pharmacy. Section 61, Wyoming Board of CPAs. Section 62, Board of Physical Therapy. Section 54, Board of Hearing Aid Specialists. 64, a lot of us need that. Section 68, Board of Psychological Examiners, Psychologist Examiners. Board of Section 75, Board of Outfitters. Section 78, Mental Health Professionals Licensing Board. Section 79, Board of Nursing Home Administrators. Section 83, Board of Occupational Therapy. Section 84, Board of Professional Geologists. And Section 251, Board of Veterinary Medicine. Mr. Chairman, all of these are funded by dues from their members. They do not involve general fund. If you have questions about a particular board, please ask us. We generally don't spend a lot of time on these boards. There was one request for general fund. It came from the Board of Professional Teaching Standards. They wanted a $75,000 general fund appropriation for a computer program that they thought would help facilitate their processing of applications that they're saying they're getting more applications and they're running behind. The governor recommended to us. We have concurred. Our standing position generally is these outside boards are self-sufficient and should rely on the dues or the fees that they collect. If there are no questions, then call for the question. But Senator Larson.
Senator Larson.
I wonder if the Department of Appropriations could refresh my memory on what are the duties of the Board of Euthanasia?
We like all youth in Asia. They're all good people.
Any other questions for any of these sections? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt sections 12, 13, 16, 17, 18, 19, 22, 28, 30, 31, 33, 34, 35, 38, 52, 54, 56, 58, 59, 61, 62, 64, 68, 75, 78, 79, 83, 84, and 251, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Those sections have passed. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. And I didn't assign these sections out, so I'll just take them myself. I move section 6. We're now, by the way, into the section 3 to our budget, which is capital construction. These are the one-time items that are fairly large that address our capital construction needs. I move section 6 of the budget, the A&I, capital construction. And you can see there that when you... go back to your cheat sheet. It's kind of interesting because if you look at the cheat sheet, you'll see the projects on that first column. Now we're looking at it's page 1 of 1 on mine, but it's section 3 is why it's renumbered there. But the first column would be the recommendations by the Capitol Building Facilities Commission. Then you have the JAC actions, and I'm not sure if that's not true. Those are the governor's recommendations, but there are some substantial differences between what the governor recommended and what the Facilities Commission recommended. But what we did fund in A&I was the construction management contingency of $3.2 million. Those go to just manage the extra cost overages and emergencies. We found that it's been a very helpful account. It's also been utilized to acquire property. Part of our notion there is that over time we do need to acquire property, and we ought to be buying the property when it's a good price and not when we absolutely need it. In the capital complex construction account, we added $10 million. That was not recommended by the governor. And my recollection is we have $27 million that we've accumulated. This takes it to, or no, $17 million. This takes us to 27. We have two, those will really deal with two different areas. One is we have a major remodeling effort that needs to be made of our capital to put in, to bring it, make it more modern, and also to put in things, simple things like a fire retardant system, a sprinkler system to preserve our assets. And we're also going to be having the St. Mary's complex taken a look at as we take over that property. So those will be major appropriations. The committee thought it was, again, we ought to be salting away for those proposals. A&I lab level 1-2 design studies, $5.6 million. This is a big ticket item. We have DCI crime lab and DEQ or Department of Health labs that are over in the Hathaway building. And they're biohazard labs. There is a general feeling that, that's not a good place to have these biohazard facilities. In addition, the University of Wyoming has a level 3 lab that they're struggling with. The construction costs for that went out for inquiry are coming in at about $700 a square foot for these types of facilities. The construction manager was not comfortable with those dollars, and so the governor had recommended a much smaller appropriation. If you look at the total price of just the if you add in all of the labs, and the idea was also to move DCI's offices to these new facilities, under the present square footage estimates, we're talking about $70 million.
Senator Nicholas, I'm sorry, I was just alerted to a point of business that we need to adopt Section 2 as a whole.
Oh,
if
great.
We could do that.
Adoption of Section 2 as a whole.
So I have to, for formality, I need a vote for all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 2 as a whole. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? This section has passed.
Okay, then I move Section 3, and then within Section 3, I move Section 06 to A&I, capital construction for A&I. We were talking about these lab facilities. So there's a question of where they should be located. The state of Wyoming has some, about 8 acres out on near LCCC, whether that's the right place or whether some other place. The consensus is we ought to get started on this. I think there was an opportunity to fund these labs, and there was actually money set aside for doing them about 5 to 10 years ago. We would have built them for about a third of the cost of the present appropriation. So what we did was we went ahead and authorized the $5.6 million for the level 3 design for all facilities. We kind of want them to design it in modular units. We set aside another $10 million for the facility cost. But I think right now the consensus of the JAC is that when we come back next year, if we have a surplus, this is probably the highest priority. We don't have a solution to the University of Wyoming. They've been looking at a modular unit to take care of their needs. But we did add a footnote that says the University of Wyoming may submit a request to participate in the Level 3 study if there's some cost savings to do it. If there's not, fair enough, let them go there. But big appropriation item, probably that we think the highest priority in the next year or two. We funded Air Force port upgrade for Guernsey at $9 million. There's a maintenance facility design for $381,000. Those are general funds, those are federal funds, excuse me. For the state fair, CAPCON, $425,000. We're saying that the agency can keep some of their dollars to put into the capital facilities. In the Attorney General's office, we have funded the small arms storage facility at the Law Enforcement Academy so they can take their store their new high-tech ammo in that facility. Training school addition, $669,000, is to remodel some of the buildings up in the Lander facility to accommodate DEQ personnel. There's $3 million of agency dollars, $1.8 million of state water facilities for parks. Those are out of dollars that they have. On state parks, we put in $2.4 million for facility deficiencies, $3.7 million to work on their road deficiencies. There is special revenue at the state parks of $110 for their facilities. The game and fish are big winners in this. We put in $14.5 million to redo their facilities. That will add on a new entrance and a major facility upgrade for the game and fish. And we have the DOC relocate modular 3, $250,000, and some dollars at the prison for the training center, $289,000. I'd stand for questions on Section 6 of ANI's capital facilities budget.
Any questions on Section 6? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Talking about the Level 3 lab, I'd be interested to know if there's any discussion by the Joint Appropriations Committee on the location. As I understand this, it's a lab that serves the entire state of Wyoming. And a lot of communities are always sending their information to Cheyenne to get processed. Did you think about a central location to better facilitate the entire state reaping the benefits of this and do a cost analysis to see how much it costs to get all the information down here if we continue to have it here versus in the central part of the state?
Mr.
Senator Nichols.
Chairman, at least one member of the committee did that, and he thinks it ought to be located in Laramie, and the cost wouldn't be that great. And I think there was my roommate at that time was a senator from Casper. He thought it ought to go to Casper and goes there. I mean, here's the problem that you're going to have. One is a lot of these employees are here. We need to get moving on this. And we did have a discussion among ourselves, not in committee form, but should we throw it into a prison-like scenario, and that is go out, have a committee, figure out where they ought to go. You know, I think the answer is if somebody wants, we need to get moving on this. And when you start doing the Level 3 study, a lot of that requires that you have a site because a lot of that is site work, and it's important to get moving. And we didn't have a good answer to how long do we want to wait to fight over the site location. And I wasn't just shucking and jiving. I thought it really ought to go into Laramie where there's educational facilities. But the discussion sort of ended there. We've got the monies going in. The site has not been selected. It's fair game for anybody to put amendment on to move it.
Senator Jennings.
Chairman. What is the DEQ training school, and why does it need an addition?
The training school is the state training school in Laramie. There are existing buildings there, and we are housing. Those are our own facilities. We have DEQ staff. They have a regional office there, and these dollars are to upgrade some of those facilities so they can move more offices into state facilities on state grounds in Lander.
Yeah, you said Laramie first time.
Did I say Laramie? Lander. You know, Lander, Laramie, same to me.
Senator Larson.
In regard to the $9 million for the airfield, in my memory, there were supposed to be, and I think you had a slip of the tongue, some federal funds involved with that we were to pay a certain amount, and then the federal a government was going to come in and make up the difference of that. I see no reference to that at all. Has that disappeared, or what is?
Mr. Chairman, I'll ask for my colleague from Goshen County, but I think the answer was they would not pay for the airfield. But if we build the airfield, then the feds are going to come in and build hundreds of millions of dollars of improvements in facilities around it. But we are responsible to get the thing going. This is one of those things, if you build it, they'll come.
Senator Meyer.
I don't believe it was hundreds of millions of dollars in facilities around it, but there were some facilities attached to the airfield. There were also a substantial increase in the number of training days and a change in the mission of the guard up there. It's becoming very integral to the training in the entire military in the United States. It's going to be one of the top, four training centers in the country. So it's
It's the change of what's going on up there is really amazing, and it's something that everybody should take a look at to see where it is now and where it's going to go.
Senator Von Schlattern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to elaborate on that, the good senator from Teton County, you're correct. There was a project that had an airfield with matching funds, but that was for the C-17 airfield to be built out on the base somewhere on our National Guard facility, not to upgrade Guernsey. Guernsey's on us. And we did make the next level of designation in the, I think for the Air Force, but I'm missing the words I need. So by doing these improvements, we've stepped one more level up in the national training scenario. So it's a huge economic boost for that part of the state, plus the rest of the state's got something really crow about there.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, we are keeping our eye on this because, for example, last year there were some tracer fires. There was a pretty large fire. We were called upon to appropriate general fund money to go redo some fencing. So part of this we have to be cautious about and use good sense. I mean, following up on the senator from Gillette, recently they have increased the size of the mission, the federal mission. There's been a B-11 process just going in recently, and on my recollections, it's between 13 and 17 new employees, federal fund employees. So this is going to be, it is growing. And then they receive a billeting charge or revenue for the services they provide. And part of what we're interested in making sure is that the billeting that they receive from guard units or military units coming into train cover the full expense of what it takes, and that there are reserve accounts set for damages, and that we don't want to also be saddled in 10 or 15 years with an environmental issue that we might have to fund through our dollars. We're repeatedly assured that these things are under consideration, that they will be well thought out. But it deserves special attention to make sure that while we're recruiting these federal missions to train at Guernsey, and while it might be great for economic development there, we have to be sensitive to any future exposure, a liability that we may have for cleanup, for damages, and things like that.
Any further questions for Section 6?
Thanks.
Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 6, the A&I to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, Section 6 is passed. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 27, which is the School Facilities Commission, $357 million appropriation. With respect to this, it's on page 74 of the budget. We have a $20 million effective immediately. I talked about this a couple days ago. We're really setting this at about $357 million of work is in the target area of what we think that our contracting capacity is. You'll recall that there is an appropriation from the school foundation program account of $271 million to cover this obligation. And that is because we are not profiling at this time coal lease bonuses because they've not actually been, the sales have not been approved. And in the meantime, we have to cash flow this construction. I think I've covered it. We have a very good pamphlet that was prepared by the Facilities Commission looking at what the projects are, what the lists are. Now, those project lists are not guaranteed. I mean, it just means that's the order that the projects are, and a lot of things can change. And, in fact, the commission will use their judgment to perhaps pay for or build a school that where the price for the contract came at a reasonable price, where another community might have a price that's out of control or much higher than is expected. I'll stand for questions on the Facilities Commission.
Any questions for Section 27? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 27, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, that section passes. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move for Section 67, University of Wyoming. The big winner there is the College of Business, $54 million. There's an appropriation for $3 million for labs.
And the fine arts performing, that's the 650. That's to begin the process of designing that facility, which will be the, I think that's the next big project on their five-year plan. The central energy plant, the $450,000, that's to take a look at it. Right now, the facility only burns stoker coal, and there may be some capacity issues, but the biggest thing is it's restricted to a coal that's not generally available in this area. I think they're trucking that out of Montana now, so let's take a look at that. I also think it takes a look at the whole utility system, the steam system, and tries to make sure that we're taking proper account for that. Stand for questions on Section 67.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, in the question about the steam system, we're also talking about the steam tunnels?
Cause yes.
I've been through those. All right, thank you.
Same thing. It's the whole system.
Okay.
It'd be the tunnels, the duct work, along with the steam pipe.
Any other questions for Section 67? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 67 to Senate File 1, please signify by saying aye.
Yeah.
Those opposed, Section 67 passes.
Chairman, I move Section 3 of the budget.
Any questions on Section 3 of the budget? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 3 to the budget, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Section 3 has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, that takes us to the Section 300, that are the special appropriations. The first one is Section 300. I move that section. It's a let me move Section 300, 301. Well, I'll move Section 300. That takes us to Section 301, which is the fund balancer definitions. Simply definitions, and I move that section. Call for the question.
Any questions on Section 301? Seeing none, all those in favor of Section 301, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, Section 301 is passed.
You know, Mr. Chairman, I'll back up. We didn't. I should have called for the question on Section 301. Those are the fund balancers. They're in there really as placeholders right now. We don't know what they're going to be until we finish up all of our budget process. So I'd call for the question on 301. Should we do 301 or we do it all in group?
We can. I get
one at a time.
We can do them all in groups.
What do you care? Does anybody care how we do it? Okay. What I'm going to do is move Section 300. And I'll call for a question on all the Section 300s when we get to the end. Okay, I'll do it, but I'll explain it. I move Section 300 that I've talked to you about, fund balancers. That is that's something we'll fill in as we get further along. The definitions are Section 301, which I move. That takes us to Section 302, which I move. That's the Medicaid contingency appropriations that we've discussed. You'll see that we've reduced it to $20 million. As explained, that Department of Health is comfortable with that. Section B is the $4.2 million for the pandemic flu dollars. There's a significant difference between A and 2. In Section A, it requires legislative appropriation to get those monies. For the pandemic flu in Section B, the governor can call on those monies without legislative appropriation. I move Section 303, Employee Benefits. This is the funding of the state health insurance. That's the 85%, 15% amount. You may or may not recall that with respect to health insurance, we appropriate a specific dollar per employee. It is a dollar that we anticipate will fund the 85-15 program. If the program got it more expensive, the appropriation is still limited to that which we actually appropriate, so it could be under some scenario that the employee might have more than 15%. We don't anticipate that to be the case. Taking over on page 81, subsection B, that's the longevity pay of $40 that is the additional longevity pay that's outside the statute that we appropriated for many years, and we continue that process. Section C at the bottom of 81, that is the $6.7 million in carryover for market pay adjustments. There's a little bit less than that money is still remaining in that account to be taken over, but we carry over all those dollars to allow the funding of market adjustment, salary adjustment, compensation pool issues, and X-band employees. At page 82, subsection D, the $6.7 million, that is the appropriation for the health insurance benefits for retirees. Again, the retirees that are qualified to this are the retirees that are still participating in the state plan at the time that they retire. Taking over to the top of page 83, section E, that is the retirement health insurance benefits account to which we're putting the 1%. You'll recall that in order to meet the GASB requirements for governmental accounting, we are now implementing a process where we first appropriate 1% for all state employees and then require that the dollars be paid back into this account, to which we should be addressed by interim study to figure out how we can make this program amortize itself, if you will, or make it actuarially sound. The next F and G are really just authorizations should we have unanticipated funding shortfalls before we come back. The next item I move is section 304, which is on page 83. That's the Wyoming Pipeline Authority budget. That's the loan to them. I've already discussed that. And he pointed out the dilemma that we need to be thinking about, and that is, are they really going to pay these loans back, or should we be giving them general fund? And this budget is treated as a loan. Same issue with respect to, I'll move section 305. That's the infrastructure authority or loan. Once again, I move that. The same explanation applies. With respect to, then we move to page 85. I move section 306. The first item is the collection of fees for the fire prevention. This was brought up in the in that budget. Even though the fire account is growing in dollars, it used to be that once it hit, I think it was $5 million, fees would no longer be assessed to the counties. We think we have a lot more fire exposure out there. And that $5 million, while it may have been an appropriate number for a reserve years ago, it's not any longer appropriate for the exposure that we have to fires. So what we're saying is, notwithstanding any caps, the assessment fees will continue to the counties to build that fund as high as it'll go to be prepared for some of these high exposure losses that we think will happen. Section 307 is the executive flex authority allowing transfers between programs at 10% and between the branches of agencies at 5%. So when we tell you that, look, there is a mechanism to move dollars around, this is where that authority is found. Over on page 86 at the top, subsection B, we explain that that has to be accomplished through the B1 process, and there's enabling. We provide, I move section 308, and we provide the same or similar flexibility to the judiciary for their flex authority. That takes us to section 309 on page 87. I move that section. That is the position freeze, essentially saying that if you want to fill a vacancy, you need to have an appropriation. Borrowing authority, this is, I move section 310. This is borrowing authority temporary within a year for funding shortfalls. The first one is for general government. Over on page 88 at section B, that's the, we authorize borrowing authority from the Department of Transportation if they have cash flow. Once again, these are temporary cash flows, where their revenues do not immediately offset their expenditures. The YDOT has never used this, but would like to continue to have the safety net of having it there. Budget reduction, I move section 311. And, you know, I misstated on earlier, this is section 311 is where we have authority to reduce general appropriations and to prevent any deficit. That takes us to section 312. I move that section starting at page 89. This is the appropriation for the
Major maintenance for all the state, includes the state facilities, university, community colleges, and we calculated at 1.5% of that formula. You recall last year, last biennium, it was 2.5%, but the consensus is that we've made a big dent and we can reduce that. And that goes over to page 97. I'll just stand for a moment. Are there any questions on those? I suppose if somebody wants to ask a question, jump up. If not, then section 317. Pardon me? Did I skip one? Oh, I did. I apologize. So I did 314. That was... No, I didn't. I just...
You're on 313.
I'd made my job a lot easier. You skip about 15 pages, it gets easy. Section 313, I moved that. That's the Supreme Court, District Court budgets. What we were finding is particularly the district courts were not utilizing the executive branch method of preparing their budget. Specifically, if they, for example, in an agency, if you have a position that's, you're, say, paying $50,000 salary, if that person quits and you rehire a person at $30,000, in the standard budget, you get ratcheted down to $30,000. Now, in most agencies, it works out pretty well because if you have, say, 200, 300 employees, as employees move up in rank, you have some falling off. So you have older employees retiring, newer employees coming up. The judiciary advises, or the particular district court, saying, well, we only have, particularly for law clerks, only one or two positions. Those law clerks, we might hire one at the lower salary. They move through the salary. If you require us to net to zero that salary or net to back into the replacement, then the new person cannot get a salary increase. Well, the problem is we do have a budget process. I think the solution probably is that we create a salary pool that can be overseen by the commission, the judicial commission that oversees their budget, and allow dollars to go out for reasonable raises. But you have to have some. I really think they ought to, and the JAC agreed that we ought to have them on the same budget regiment as we are, and we'll address the problems. We'll find a solution to that issue. I move Section 314, Retirement Study. This is the, you take a close look at this. This is the study that we've talked about. I described a little earlier today the problems with whether or not the cost of living increases to the big plan, the retirement plan, are keeping pace. And part of the issue is are we managing those funds in an appropriate way? Are they achieving the rate of return that they should be? But I'll tell you, if you compare them to the permanent mental trust fund investments, they're about the same. And I submit to you it's going to take a broader look than just looking at the investment principles that the commission's overseeing. We're going to have to begin to look at whether or not we're contributing enough and who should be making those contributions. But that study was recommended by the governor. We concurred that it ought to be completed. The next over on page 94, section 315, that's the computer leasing issue. You recall that I talked to you earlier about the problem with computer leases. Do we buy computers versus lease them, particularly in a time where we can afford to buy them? Are we going to allow agents to make those decisions? We'd like more guidance. We'd like more study on that issue. And we'd like to that leasing has to, if there's going to be a recurring, it ought to come back for general or through the budget process and not just get rolled into the standard budget process. The next item is Section 316, Guardian Ad Litem. This is the transfer of the program plus the position from the Supreme Court over to the Public Defender's Office. We've already talked about that. They have asked for some changes. We'll take a look at that in the amendments. That takes us over to Section 317. This is the carryover of the colorectal cancer funds. I moved that section. We've talked about that. That's the $960,000, of which some is carryover, some is new, and some is in the budget. This section was necessary to implement the carryover. That takes us over to the carryover of the state fair capital construction funding. There are some unexpected fundings of the state fair that we're allowing them to take over and to continue to use those for the next biennium. School infrastructure appropriation. This is the sweep, isn't it? This is the I think the carryover of the school infrastructure appropriation. I'm just jumping. I didn't highlight the way it's coming, but I think this is the this just carries over the capital facility construction dollars so they can continue to spend those dollars that were previously appropriated on for their capital construction. That takes us to Section 318, Community College Endowments. I moved that section. We've added $4 million for the two colleges that have already used their endowments, and they'd like to continue their challenge grant. Adds $4 million to those two schools' challenge grant programs. The University of Wyoming Capital Construction Amendments, these are prior appropriations. They had some changes. Some projects came in for more, some less, so they've come back and asked us to reallocate the dollars. So these are previous appropriations reallocated in a way that they can finish up projects. They've removed some and are focusing on others. They asked for, on page 100, lines 16 through 21, that's the sinking fund. We require that if we're going to go out and get these matching dollars, then the university ought to also put in a sinking fund for the maintenance of those facilities as part of their fundraising effort. And they didn't like that. The governor recommended that we take that out. The JAC kept it in. It's now up for your consideration. That takes us to the Section 320. This is the local government distributions. And it starts at page 102 and goes through 114.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a question on the university buildings on the School of Energy Resources facility. Maybe I'm forgetting, but as I recall, when we put that School of Energy Resources in, the idea was that it would draw on multidisciplines all across the campus, and that the engineers or whatever we kick out of the School of Energy, chemists and those kind of people, would get a very broad education, which it appears to be what most first-rate schools go to now. And the examples that were given, as I recall, were a university in Oklahoma and one in I believe, Austin, Texas, were the premier schools. And when they gave one of those engineering degrees, they were broad-based. In other words, a broad-based, they had to take things like accounting, so they could tell if a project was on budget and off budget. They had to do their regular engineering. They had to take languages. They had to take all sorts of subjects. And the idea when we created that school was that this school would do likewise. We would pattern ourselves after what is perhaps the two premier engineering schools in the U.S., particularly in natural resources. And now I see they're building buildings, and it makes me a little bit uncomfortable for two reasons. One, that isn't what we talked about. And two, because the real value of a school of engineering is the intellectual capital, not the bricks and mortar. My fear is that the university, being a university, we'll build one of their big old brick silos, and nothing will get in and nothing will get out, and it will be mediocre. If you visit with people who recruit engineers, quite frankly, the engineers coming out of China and India are much better than ours, much better. When they go to hire, their preference is to hire overseas. They're better trained engineers. And if we start walking down the road of the traditional silo education for engineers, we're going to fall right into the lap of the same old mediocrity that most engineering schools in the United States have today. Why would we spend $20 million on a building? If we got $20 million, can we plow it back in there for academic excellence? Is there any way to do that? Or I'm sure there's a way to do it. I just wanted to see where the chairman would lead us with that.
Well,
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't really prepared for that because this was an older appropriation that already got in, but silos are good, particularly if they're in Laramie. This is, remember, this is $20 million to be matched, so what I had understood is the part of the strength of whether this is really a good program. We'll see whether somebody will come up with the $20 million match to build a $40 million facility. And beyond that, I'm just not prepared to respond to you. I wish I was, but I'm not. This was just a readjustment of prior appropriations, but I'll bet you in another day I can get prepared. Well, the good thing about this is that, remember, you have to have amendments, and between now and the time of amendments, I'll be prepared.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I could answer a little bit of that. I do know that the program is a multidisciplinary program. It's drawing from several existing entities and programs on the University of Wyoming campus, and somebody who's going through that program is going to have to participate in many of these of the programs or many of these fields of studies in order to get that particular degree. And indeed, faculty, they're depending upon faculty quite a bit from these other disciplines in order to participate in this School of Energy Resources. Now, we can name the building something else if we wanted to, but the fact is that there's a great deal of interest right now in this School of Energy Resources. One particular large energy company donated $5 million recently towards the School of Energy Resources in order to research and explore renewable energy. And so when you have this much interest coming onto a campus and you have the additional money that the university is putting into it, you're going to expand programs and you're going to have somewhere for them to be. Now, if we're concerned that naming a building the School of Energy Resources means that it's going to change the nature of this approach, then we can certainly call it something else. But this $20 million and the match that goes along with it reflects the great interest that we have precipitated by what we started just a few years ago. And to me, it's comforting to know that the university in the state of Wyoming is not having to foot a lot of this money.
Senator Larson.
Along and add to that, there many of you were not there, but there was $1 million donation announced in the rotunda today to match that other money just this afternoon.
Senator Schiffer, Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, and I realize that, and of course that's $1 million out of 20 or whatever. I mean, that's, you know, yeah. It just seems to me we created the school, and if the school's going the wrong direction, we're better off to go back to the oil company and say, wait a minute, if you really want to make a difference, go for academic excellence. Don't put it into bricks and mortar. It's not necessary. I think you'll find if you check the guy that runs the school, he's not asking for a building. The board that's overseeing the school, they're not asking for a building. You know, these are the guys that are supposed to know. And why we're tying up money in bricks and mortar in this day and age. And again, I'll reiterate, you don't find the best engineering schools in the world, which are China and India. I assure you, they are not building buildings. They're building intellect. And that's exactly what we ought to be doing. And I think it's great to get $1 million donated, but let's build intellect with it. Let's not build a silo.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with that. And one of the reasons why in this section we have identified specific buildings
is because you'll recall that while we put in these facility match dollars, we did not want the university to go out and just secure matching dollars for any type of a building somebody wanted to construct. So, for example, if you say, well, I'd like to have a new law school, I'll give you $3 million, and there's a pool of dollars. We didn't want to do that, and we identified specific projects. I also believe that the School of Energy Resources facility was not something that was in the five-year historic plan. That really came out of a lot of legislative, executive branch initiative, but we'll make an investigation to conclude. And I'm not prepared to address it, but I do believe when you talk about the educational services provided by other disciplines or other schools for these types of high-tech programs, and the part of the name of the game is research and facilities. And you know that I've got a son attending Colorado School of Mines. If you want to go, they've got entire buildings put just up for petroleum research, for pieces of petroleum, where they have labs throughout the whole building. What the explanation is, I can't provide it to you, but I will come back. And I don't want to be flippant about this. This is, I know it's important. I know that we only want to fund things that are within our mission to provide a top-quality education. And just because somebody wants to donate to a particular building doesn't mean that we ought to fund it. We ought to fund those things that are part of the mission statement, and we'll become better prepared. No further questions. That takes us to Section 320, which is the governmental distributions.
Senator Bebout.
Chairman, since we're talking about the university and some of these fundings for facilities, I have a question. You mentioned earlier the five-year plan for some more buildings and expansion of facilities at the university, and there's $650,000 to look at a fine and performing arts building. My question is, you know, there's a lot of needs in the community colleges, and I certainly support what's going on with the College of Business. Did you talk about, you know, prioritization so we try to take care of the community colleges in some areas that they need this capital construction dollars rather than starting down the road again on another project at the University of Wyoming?
You know, Mr. Chairman, we did talk about the community colleges and have long discussions about it, and it's a little bit difficult to talk that in the context with UW. I mean, we have a system of higher education. They're all a little bit different. To defend the university as a statewide college, it's funded through the general fund. With respect to new facilities on for community colleges, I'm sure there's, as always in the past, there will be requests for capital facility funding for the community colleges. One of the things that you have to recognize is that we're paying 60% of the cost of community colleges now, and that every time a new building is constructed at the university, at a community college, then that offers that college an opportunity to provide additional services. They then issue more, or offer more credits. They get more money out of the allocation formula, and they do that at the expense of their colleagues, their other institutions, unless we provide for more money in the funding. And so now you have almost a race of construction among the colleges, because if you have more buildings, you have more students, you get more of the pie. And I'll just give you a great example. There is a LCCC has a campus in Albany County that Albany County people are not being taxed. It was paid for by capital facilities type tax or revenue bonds that are being paid for by Laramie County voters. And the reason they can do it is because when they fill that up with students, they get a bigger piece of that pie at the expense of CWC and other institutions. The Gillette campus, to the extent it can grow because they have the capital resources to build it, they build it, they get more student hours. And all of a sudden, when they construct, there's the model right now sends more money there. And the most recent craze or the competition is in funding what has traditionally been revenue bonds for dormitories. And the best way to recruit students is to build dormitories. Bring in, lower your, if you can pay for it through general funds, then you can lower your room and board. And if I can offer students in Laramie
If I'm in Cheyenne, I can offer, that's a bad example, but if I'm in Riverton, I can offer students in Cheyenne lower room and board if they'll travel there. Then you bring more students. That drives up your formula. And it is a complicated thing that we've got to get a handle on. And simply building, originally the notion was communities build what they want, they pay for it. But we're paying the bill now. And every time we authorize a new facility, the war goes on with respect to allocation. And somehow we've got to get a handle on it. The governor put a task force, and I submit to you that task force didn't even get close to the problem and figuring out whether we, sooner or later we're going to have to go, I think, to a system of higher education where if we're going to fund it at the state level, we say, where are we going to have our facilities? Where are we going to fund them? But right now it's a race to construct in order to get money. With regard to our budget, there is no recommendation for facility dollars. Most of the dollar, a lot of the dollars that came in for the community colleges were for residence halls. And the university says, great, if your students don't have to pay for the cost of resident instructions, then we'd like to have our remodeling paid as well so that we can lower the cost of our residents so that you're not essentially pirating our students. We have an issue there that's got to be resolved.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And along those lines, we've got, some dormitories, and I want to thank this body for putting some money in the EWC. But some of the we have a nice dormitory. But some of the new dormitories that are being built are just not dormitories, they're suites. So you'll have a dormitory suite. And so where are the students going to go? They're going to go to the suite. Well, of course. So there is that consideration that there is that competition for students for the funding formula. But we don't know what our needs are. We haven't put into perspective how many students we have in the state, what workforce development we need, how many students are coming out of the state, what is the capacity, and what should be the capacity. And those questions weren't answered, and so we were reluctant to basically provide any authorization, even with local funds, until we get some questions answered.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, referenced Oklahoma. That energy school down there is in the Starkey Energy Center. It's described as four square blocks, 7 acres, 340,000 square foot teaching and energy research complex, 200 teaching and research laboratories, and over 30 classrooms. You do have to have a little bit of brick and mortar to do it right.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, if that's all the discussion on UW, we'll move through to Section 320, local government distributions. At this point, when we talk about local governments, we've got to figure out how we're going to get through the third reading. And in talking to the leadership, here's my recommendation. In order to reduce the impact of staff time, instead of going in and asking for the staff to draft up or the words, if you will, the text for an amendment, on second and third reading, we'll accept amendments where the amendment is in the form of a spreadsheet or a distribution, so that members, when you're evaluating whether one distribution formula for the other, you actually see the spreadsheets. The spreadsheets have to be completed. I think in talking to leadership, what we're asking, though, is that you, instead of just going in and saying, well, $25 million for one community, the idea is you propose a formula. You can define the formula or make sort of an explanation of it, and then the spreadsheets, and you can make your motion or your amendment would be to adopt that distribution formula. Whatever the formula is by the spreadsheet that's at the third reading, the final one, we'll then decide at that time whether to adopt the spreadsheet into the budget bill or whether we want to have text developed, written out to explain it. But we'll defer to our staff on that when we see what we come up with. So just to re-explain, if you want to propose a different distribution model, you put the amendment, put the distribution model with the spreadsheets in so people can evaluate it. We've already provided to you the JHC distributions, which are on the colored silos. Today we handed out three different documents that I'd like to take you through. The first document is it's sort of half cryptic. It starts off with my name on the top, on the right hand, on the left was Dan Noble, who is the author of this with the Department of Revenue. It's impact of exemption on food and sales tax by county. The significance of this is that there's two approaches when you're taking a look at the loss of sales tax. One approach is you just look at what your sales tax, total sales tax revenues are, and then you look the next year after the food tax was taken off and what is the next year revenues, and that will give you maybe a surrogate of what the sales tax loss is. The other way to do it is, which was probably more accurate way to do it, is to follow the methodology and you turn over on page Exhibit A to that document, you'll see that what the Department of Revenue did here was broke it down into categories. And the categories are then reflected by bakeries, grocers, special foods. So these are really the categories by tax that are where we lifted off the taxes. So this is intended then on this methodology to identify what the actual lost revenues were for those tax codes. Then what happened in this exhibit, if you turn it over to exhibits, there's B, C, and D. And the explanation is over on the front page. And so Exhibit A did the losses. Exhibit B was the revenue loss by just the industry sector. And if you go through these numbers, you can see that there are wide variations year to year. And I think I gave the example that if you're a county that has a huge number in a particular year, a substantial number of workers that are not living there and that tend to eat prepared foods, that year you would have a different impact. And Albany County saw that one year where revenues went up because they were putting the pipeline through, and then the next year those tax revenues went right back down. But this is trying to get at some of the heart of it. So chart B is revenue loss by just the industry sector. Exhibit C is the impact based upon just the exemption to food. And then what Exhibit D did was sort of a hold harmless. It took about an extra 2.9% to make everybody harmless for the sort of comparing the loss of local government and the state average for each of the industry sectors. So they're trying to balance these things out. But the idea was while it took a little bit more money to, and these are annual dollars, to look at the way that revenues are filled in, this is either the higher of the actual loss or that are computed or the average increases, so that if you're one of those counties that had an aberration, the average would sort of take care of it. So that was trying to take out some of those inequities. The point here is that if you want to propose that a portion of the monies go through sales tax formula, that you need to go over the next step, and is which formula do I want to use? Do I want to use formula A, B, C, or D? And you can talk to us if you want to get the Department of Revenue over and talk to them to, so you better understand than I gave an explanation. Then it's easy to get those resources over here. But sales tax has its own issue. The next one is the black and white model that's got the silos, black and white. It says local distribution model, biennium appropriation, WHAM proposal. It's exactly what it says. This is WHAM's idea of how the dollars should flow. They've taken out the, they've actually, and their folks here that are representing that are here to better explain it. But generally, they do have a food tax backfill model. And right now, I can't tell you what model they used on it. We need to make further inquiry there to see which model they did. Then they have, for the direct distribution, they propose that starts at the third sheet. And then going over to, they have a different, over on page, well, these pages aren't numbered, I apologize. But if you look at this spreadsheet, which is the one that we were using last year, that is their block county allocation, block allocations consensus process. They were not enamored with the JAC proposal where we had an inverse ratio where counties with low assessed valuations were got more dollars. They thought it would be better to give a base amount and then do a population distribution amount. Again, you do this. The winners are the high population centers. The losers are the small communities. Winners and losers in every one. Now, as we go through on these formulas, what the if you ask the LSO staff to develop a model, what they're doing is putting in the total appropriations that each community is going to see. And I'll submit to you this: the WHAM proposal is a little bit harder to read because if you want to see the impact, you have to look at their, you have to combine your resources, and it's harder to compare. When you go to LSO staff, we're asking them to provide it in one format so that you can actually look at your community, you could see the winner loss, it's easier to compare. So that if somebody wants to implement the WHAM proposal and offers an amendment, what we need to do is get to staff, have them put it in their models, so that we can have a better comparison. The next document I'd like to show you is this one, the colored one with new silos. Senator Job and I worked on this, and just to give you, this is sort of more the model or the format that we'd like folks to work with. You can do almost anything you want to it. What we did, and there are three different alternatives. The first alternative just adds another method of distribution. That's the proposed sales tax replacement, $40 million. Now, in the WHAM proposal, they took the full $40 million out of the direct block grant, which was the consensus grant. And, of course, they would. Everybody wants to have more direct dollars to them, and they want to have less consensus dollars. I think our, as we heard from members of the legislature, we were interested in making less direct dollars, more dollars for infrastructure, capital construction, but that's a policy we'll set here. So what we did is we dropped, with the $40 million, we dropped the direct consensus down $200 million and the direct dollars to about $100 million. So we sort of split the $40 million between those two categories. The first alternative, one, adds that method of distribution, robs, if you will, again, the consensus dollars, $28 million there. The balance comes out of the direct, and it leaves in the hardship funding. And then the how it affects your community is shown on pages 2 and 3. So you can look at and you can see how it there you could see that the counties are there and the cities are there. I submit to you, if we follow this format, you don't see all the numbers going into it, but it's easier to compare the result. So you don't see it quite broken down as much, but you could see the proposed, you see the JAC, and you could see the difference. And what we're suggesting to you is this is a better format to compare different models. Alternative two, local government distribution, this is the same. Only what this does is takes out entirely the hardship funding. So all the hardship is taken out of this component. And then, once again, it leaves the silos are the same. Hardship is taken out. The argument, we heard the criticisms that hardship communities got taken care of in one of the formulas, the R6, if you will, the inverse, that's the inverse ratio for the consensus, that because you're giving low assessed valuation counties a boost, and then you're getting a weighted sales tax in the direct dollars, you give the hardship communities another hit through hardship, maybe giving them too many bumps. So you get here, you get to see what it looks like if you take out the hardship dollars. And once again, the spreadsheets are on 5 and 6. And then the third alternative we had asked staff to provide for you is reducing the hardship by 1/2. And so, again, the silos remain the same. The direct distribution reduces the hardship by 1/2. So these are just three alternatives that we asked, Senator Jobe and I asked the staff to prepare, just to show you what they're capable of doing, what it looks like. And we submit to you that if you asked the budget staff to stick with this format, I think you'll find it's easier for everybody to evaluate it as we're trying to figure out what you think is a more fair formula. But as it sits right now, you have the JAC recommendation. It takes 15 votes to change it. And so we'll, I guess over the next couple days we'll figure out how to forge through this. We do want you to have everybody needs to be able to understand these so that you can fairly participate and represent your communities. Questions on that area?
We're on Section 320. Questions, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, procedural question. And this does not affect me because I don't intend to put an amendment in on this section. But it strikes me that the deadline for amendments is a half hour from now. That anybody who wants to put an amendment in on this section and was waiting to get the explanation to understand what they were doing has got almost an impossible problem. And I don't know how that ought to be handled, but I just raise it as a procedural question of fairness. I say it doesn't affect me, but I could see where by running the explanation this long and this far up against the deadline, we have given anybody who wants to do something in this area a real problem if they haven't already done it.
Other comments, discussion? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, one proposal that's not in here is the county commissioners that's not on our desk. And it's a little different. The county commissioners had no input into the WAM proposal. They weren't invited to the meeting to determine it, primarily because they're not a municipality, but there is another, is when you get into the consensus block grants, that's where it primarily differs, the county commissioners. We primarily looked at the WAM proposal and the county commissioners proposal. We decided against those and went with a combination of what we've had on the books before, and also what the executive branch looked at is as far as the holding the cities, towns, and counties or the municipalities, everybody harmless on the food. We felt that it was better to do it within the formula And for myself personally, if you do it within the formula, you don't have to come back here next year and say, well, is it $40 or $45 million or $50 million? And you come back the next biennium and it's $60 million or $65 million. So it was better to get it in into the formula in its entirety. So I think everybody from JAC can answer the questions on this. We went through this fairly extensively, and we certainly would try to answer those.
Okay, we're on section 320 of the budget. Any other discussion on this particular section? Okay. Seeing none, is there somebody on the Senator Fecht?
Mr. Chairman, can I propose a 2 or 3 minute break while leadership decides how to answer Senator Scott's question?
I think that the break comes when the majority floor leader asks for one.
He's now
out there. Technically, I guess that could be a motion from anyone on the floor, and it can be voted on. So are you moving that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You hear the motion for a five-minute break? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. It's a five-minute break.
I move we take over.
They're all on the floor.
Did you see me?
No, but I always like to see you, okay. But I don't have anything to talk to you about.
Okay, so.
And if she doesn't, come on back.
Explain to me the difference between the formulas.
Yeah, jump right in here.
All right, well, I'm just going to leave and look with you.
Okie dokie. Okay, which one? Okay, well.
What did the JAC do to the formula?
Okay. What did you guys do? Did you send these? Here's 5 minutes. WCCA is that where you're involved with?
I see the
Thank you.
couple of minutes, I think. Or
I went, yeah, as soon as the majority floor leader...
Some of it's got to come out of there.
Did you see?
you keep up with that. I'll show you the salt, mister.
Thank you.
You ready? If we could get ready to resume. Senator Nicholas, are you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We've been talking about how to address really the what Senator from Natrona County had talked about, what's a fair way to do this. There was long discussion about whether or not we could suspend the rules to allow amendments to this section between now and 10 a.m. And there was a point in time we thought, great, we'll do that. Problem is, folks, that's a joint rule. And because it's the budget is in a joint rule, you'd have to go over the House to get them to suspend the rules. And I think the consensus is, particularly the leadership, is that's not an appropriate thing to do. 5 o'clock is hit, so unless you've got your amendments in, they won't be on second reading. So it looks to me like most of this discussion is going to take place on third reading of the budget on Friday. You have between now and Thursday to get your amendments in. Thursday, Friday. But our request is, and particularly the request of the staff, is these models are complicated. They take time. So please get your request, if you have them, to the staff immediately tomorrow morning, giving them the whole day to work on it. The other thing that we would request of you is, under our rules, the staff are not authorized to disclose that they're working on an amendment on your behalf unless you authorize them. If you go and give a proposal to staff, if you'll authorize the staff to disclose to anybody else that you're working on an amendment and this is what you've requested, that would give them the opportunity that when the next person comes right behind you and has a little bit different twist or maybe the same kind of idea, they can put the two of you into contact and maybe you can collaborate to get something that you like. So it's just a simple... you're not required to do it, but if you're not offended by allowing or authorizing them to disclose it to other members, it sure makes it makes the process simpler. Maybe we can get fewer amendments going. And I know that hopefully there will be collaborative groups to come together and to take a look at it. But that's that's where we are today. We're going to move forward. If you haven't gotten your amendment in, then you've got between now and Thursday at 5. The sooner the better. Mr. Chairman, that takes us over to
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I really have reservations about this. This is a local government funding is a real complicated set of issues. If we don't have a crack, and I don't know where people are on this and who might be doing something, and I will clearly represent to you that I'm not. If we don't have a good crack at it on second reading and try to do everything on third reading, I think we've got a good chance of creating a mess that's going to give us an impossible situation. There ought to be some way for suspending a joint rule. You know, the other option is carry the budget second reading over till Thursday. I can understand why that's not considered a good option either. But we need to rethink this because we're getting ourselves in quite a box.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, and I share the concerns with my colleague from Natrona County. But there are a couple complications to this that really are significant. we have checked with the Legislative Service Office. It does not appear that there is a way to step back from a joint rule. We're in it with our folks across the way, and we've got to stay with that, it appears. But it's also part of the problem is that the amendments dealing with cities, towns, and counties, first of all, they're very complex amendments to run, just to do the spreadsheets. But it gets even more complex when you have to translate them into words. And that appears to be perhaps more important than what we'd anticipated in terms of is it special legislation and those types of things, that we get into constitutional gray areas. And without knowing even how many of these amendments are out there, to say we can get them all done by 10 o'clock and get them translated into words, we're not sure we can get that done, quite frankly. And if we go the day, we can get them. Hopefully we can pull some together. I don't have any idea whether there's a similarity of views out there or not. It does limit, and this is what grieves me the most about this. It does, in a sense, limit the amendments on second reading, and that worries me. That's a bad road to start down. We've certainly limited budget amendments in the past, whatever it's been, 6-7 years. We've limited budget amendments, primarily to make the process work. I'm not sure always wisely, but that's the way it wound up. But this does limit it in terms of open season, if you will, on second reading. My gut feeling is, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I think you're going to find that as you run amendments on cities, towns, and counties, you're going to find it doesn't change the numbers much. That unless you use a little napalm or something, I mean, you know, let's wipe out all the small towns in the state or something, then it'll change it. But really, if you use the basic concepts that we're using, which is population, which is the ability to generate revenue, which is the level of sales tax compared to somebody else's sales tax. If you limit it to at least those broad categories, which is what we've done for the past 5 years, I think, four or five years, you'll find that even if you jiggle, take $10 million here and put it over there, the net to your constituents won't change much. A little bit, but not much. And I think, but I think we as senators have the right to go ahead and see those runs. What I'm told over and over, doesn't change the numbers much. The ones that are losers, and ones that are gainers. And I guess what I'm saying, I think we can make this work. It is not particularly what we had anticipated. To be very honest with you, and I'll take the blame for that, I thought we'd be done working the budget much earlier than what we are. However, I'm very appreciative that we had a full and open discussion going through it on Committee of the Whole. We're sure open to suggestion. The consensus among your leadership was that this was a reasonable way to go. And I guess we always hope in this world of ours that reason prevails. I'll try and answer any questions. If there are some, I'll sure take them on.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a question. It would seem to me that if we get to this situation where we're on third reading and we're discussing a number of amendments that are very big or critical, that we may need to suspend our own rules with regards to the amount of debate that will be allowed by our Senate rules on third reading so that we have a full and open discourse. I know that the Senate rules limit us to speaking twice I think, total of 5 minutes. And my hope is that perhaps we can at least amend or modify that so that you can have more than one opportunity to speak and have a full debate, which normally happens on general file. But the way in which we've been doing the mirror budgets, where we haven't been, we're asking lots of questions and so forth, but no amendments on general file. So in essence, we may have limited ourselves, at least in this particular area, to one opportunity to amend the budget in this locale.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, and I think that's a good suggestion. We'll sure take a look at it. And again, that's a Senate rule, and we can go in and do some magic with those if we think we need to.
Senator Von Flatter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, though, if I understand this correctly, that we are allowing third reading amendments by the rest of the body. Is that how I read getting prepared by Thursday evening?
Senator Nicholas.
Is the question, are we going to allow third reading amendments? Of course. Why don't you re-ask it again? I'm not sure if I followed the question.
Senator Von Flatter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The rules were that we were going to have only third reading amendments by the chair of the committee and majority.
Oh, no.
Minority. Thank you.
Okay. The rules provide, Mr. Chairman, that all third reading amendments have to be in at Thursday at 5. And after that, the only amendments could be by the ranking members of the JAC. So you'll have clear till Thursday at 5 to get in your amendments. And then the discussion that I had was recognizing the amount of work that goes into these spreadsheets. If we want to conform them to the... if you will, the format that we've been adhering to, that you authorize staff to identify and explain to others, that you develop groups of coalition. I know that Senator Job and I have been working on something, and we'll get it out. And, the chair has been giving us privilege of the floor to explain things. If it looks like there's something worthwhile explaining, we can always explain it before so that people have a good shot at it. And to add things to make the thing more interesting is in this budget process, we're going to have a conference committee on it, and the House may have an entirely different mechanism for distribution. But your JAC committee has spent a lot of time with these numbers. You know, and folks, really, when you start looking at distribution formulas, you have distribution by property tax assessment, sales tax allocation, population, and then you can mix and match all of them. But generally speaking, there are about four or five components that all go into each one of these, and absent somebody that's a math whiz, you'll be able to understand them, and as long as we adhere to the format. Now, another issue is the president's talked about, is at the end of the day, we have to decide, are we going to adopt and make part of the budget bill a spreadsheet that says here's what you get, or are we going to adopt the text that implements that? And I tell you, there are winners and losers on either side, because there are times where the text is adopted, and you leave and you find out that it actually, they missed something in a formula, or maybe there's something a little bit different than they thought. And so last year it was Washakie County. They left, and when they left, they realized that they were not a hardship county, and that somebody else won. And the other alternative is to fix in a formula or on a sheet, so this is what you get. And then you leave, and you find out the formula was incorrect. That one of the inputs was wrong. And there's no simple answer in the education arena. We've done it sometimes where we've actually said this is the schedule you're going to get, and we adopt the schedule. And other times we say we adopt the formula, and the formula gets there. So we'll work through that.
there any more discussions? I'm in there. I think we're moving forward.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm from the chairman of JAC. Now I'm a little confused by the timeline here, and I don't know if he misspoke or not, but he said that we could get third reading amendments in by Thursday at 5. I assume we're finishing up the budget today since we only have 321, 322, and 399 to go yet. So tomorrow is second reading. That's Wednesday. So Thursday would be third reading. So did... Then I'm confused.
Under the joint rules, the way it works is that there's a day between second and third reading.
Okay.
And under the joint rules, tomorrow is second reading. There's a dead day between second and third, which was the day that everybody got their amendments in. Closes off at 5. After 5, then you have the ranking members of the JAC, Democrat and Republican, that can propose amendments the following day. That's the way it, any other questions?
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions or clarifications is all. I understood you to say that I thought that you were going to have the staff run the WHAM proposal in the same format that these others are done. Is that still correct? You're going to, so that it would be a valid comparison? That's the first question.
Senator Nicholas.
I had not decided whether I'd personally do it. My assumption is somebody was going to run it, and we ought to get that to them. Right now, I'm not seeing that as the right solution. I think I want to take sets, but we ought to get it in the process of putting in that format. I agree.
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, secondly, you've asked that if people desire that they could be informed that other people were working on a similar concept, if they wish to do that. Could you perhaps go one step further and ask that if they desire and don't have a problem with it, that could be shared with more than just the person who may also be working with it? You can't insist that, I understand that, but I think, at least I would, not be adverse to sharing whatever the conceptual amendment came up with other people so that we are cutting down the redundancy of having to do it over. And I think that could be in the form of request that if somebody has an idea and they have somebody else on the floor who may like to know what that was, if they don't object, as those preparing it, I think it could give more concepts to be out there to try to make judgments of.
Senator Nicholas.
And I agree with that, and I think that was, you ought to share it with them. Once you authorize them to disclose it, they disclose it to anybody that comes along. And hopefully, instead of having 30 different proposals, we'll get down to 3 or 4 good proposals that are well thought out with coalitions, and we'll have a great debate on it.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. If that's all the discussion with that, then I move to Section 321 of the budget. You'll find that at page 114, and I move that section. That is the AML funding. And you'll recall that in one of the first handouts, we provided the AML distribution list. And for this first fiscal year 2008, we anticipate that $82.7 million will be appropriated or available by grants. Paragraph A makes it clear that the only those grants that we authorize the legislature can be applied for. So first of all, we're going to be the gatekeepers on what goes forward. Then item number I, Romanet 1, at lines 14 and 15, that's the ongoing $29 million, approximately $30 million of AML funding that the DEQ has, through the AML program, has routinely appropriated. We continue that. Romanets 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 are the new appropriations. For the most part,
the governor made the recs and we agreed. The only thing that came in addition was the $20 million one at Roman 6. That was a new item. But just going through them, the first one, Romanet 2, is more dollars for the that's for the subsistence insurance program, DEQ ongoing program. Romanet 3 is $1.2 million for carbon dioxide sequestration sites for essentially to advance the clean coal. You recall we have an account that's sitting out there that is to advance these, and it goes adds more dollars to that. Nothing magical about those dollars. That was what was left after we funded these other projects. The next item, Romanet 4, is the $10 million for Carbon County. That's for the new coal-to-liquid facility, and we want to make sure, with that facility, that we'll talk about it later, but we want to make sure that they are ready to proceed, and we deal with that in a moment. The Romanet 5 on the top of page 15 is $17 million for the School of Energy Resources. That's an ongoing program. It's for the ramping up of the operating dollars. The governor took the funding out of here, recognizing that these are these fundings will hang out till year 2021. I submit to you that sooner or later we're going to have to take a look at if that's an ongoing program, putting in ongoing revenues, but it's here at this point. Romanet 6, $20 million. That's the School of Energy Research for the new the matching dollars for the coal gasification research that was announced that most of you attended, or many of you did. Romanet 7 is the $3,800,000 for clean coal research. Same idea, to expand that coal research. And so you could see generally where our priorities were research. The Robinette, B is just to implement the program. Romanet C is on the Carbon County. Before we start fixing up that road, we want to make sure the requirements are met. Those requirements are a lot like the NCAR facility, where we make sure that that facility is really coming in, that they've secured their financing, and they're ready to go. Mr. Chairman, if there's no question on the AMLs, dollars.
Do we have any questions on Section 321?
That takes us to Section 322. This is the, and I move that section, this is what we're calling the sweep. This sweep sweeps at the end of the biennium, the school foundation program account down to $100 million, takes all of the excess as of that day and puts it into the Common School Permanent Land Fund. And Section 399 is just is just a cleanup matter. If there are no questions, I move all of the Section 300s for adoption and call for the question.
Any questions on the Section 300s? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that Sections 300, 301, 302, 303, 304, 305, 6, 307, 308, 309, 310, 311, 312, 313, 314, 315, 316, 317, 318, 319, 320, 321, 322, and 399 are adopted. Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Those sections have passed.
Mr. Chairman, I move for the adoption of Section 400, which is the language that addresses effective immediately, making sure that it means what we say, those dollars effective immediately, and that they don't lapse at the end of the biennium, so that they, if they're not expended between now and July 1, that the dollars appropriation continues. If there's no question, I call for the question.
Is there any question on Section 400? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Section 400, to Senate File 1. Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Senator Nicholas. That section has passed. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions on the budget, I move for adoption of the budget.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nicholas, I believe we need to do Section 300 as a whole. Is that correct?
I thought that's what we did. Just to clarify,
no.
I move for Section 300 as a whole.
Okay.
Call for the question. I so move and call for the question.
It's been any question on Senator Nicholas's motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt all Section 300s to Senate File 1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That motion is passed.
Mr. Chairman, I have no questions. Call for the question on Senate File, Senate File 1 and ask that you vote aye.
Is there any further discussion on Senate File 1? Seeing none, the question is on Senate File, on Senator Nicholas's motion on Senate File 1 do pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Senate File 1 is passed. Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries.
We took longer than the House today. We must answer.
Whoops. You don't take those.
You keep those. Yeah, usually.
Yep. I'm going to have. Where are we at? Okay. Yep. Okay, I'm with you. Thanks. Would the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report?
Mr. President, with respect to the budget bill, Senate File 1, the Committee of the Whole took action as follows. Under Section 2, the following sections were adopted. 57, 60, 63, 66, 67, 69, 70, 72, 80, 81, 85, 101, 102, 103, 120, 121, 122, 123, 124, 125, 126, 127, 128, 129, 130, 131, 132, 133, 134, 135, 136, 137, 138, 139, 140, 151, 157, 160, 167, 205, 211, 220, 270, 12, 13, 16, 17, 18, 19, 22, 28, 30, 31, 33, 34, 35, 38, 52, 54, 56, 58, 59, 61, 62, 64, 66, 75, 78, 79, 83, 84, 251, and then Section 2 as a whole was adopted. Section 3. Under Section 3, Section 6, 27, and 67 were adopted, and then Section 3 as a whole was adopted. Section 300s. Section 300, 301, 302, 303, 304, 305, 306, 307, 308, 309, 310, 311, 312, 313, 314, 315, 316, 317, 318, 319, 320, 321, 322, 399, and then section 300 was adopted, and section 400 was adopted. Senator Hastert, chairman. Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, I move for adoption of the entire Committee of the Whole report on the budget bill, Senate File 1.
You've all heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion is carried and the entire report is adopted. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I know you're going to find this very difficult to believe, but the chairman of the Minerals Committee made a mistake and reassigned the wrong bill to Appropriations. And if I could, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to request that Senate File 46 that contains no appropriation be returned from Appropriations. And that Senate File 19, which does clandestine drug labs, which does contain an appropriation, be reassigned to the Appropriations Committee.
Senator Nicholas.
Well, Mr. President, I've got this Bill 46, Discharge Water Management. I've received a lot of emails on it, and I'm not quite sure I want us to give it back up. And if I receive the one with clandestine labs, it doesn't sound very interesting. And this has got a lot of attention. It seems to me like I don't really want to give it up. I'm kind of liking this bill.
Senator Larson.
After 3 days of testimony, you will find clandestine lab drug remediation very interesting.
Hearing no objection, Senate File 46 is returned back to the desk, I guess is where it's coming, possibly with money in it. And Senate File 19 is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Have we got, what have we got, some committee reports? Yeah. Reports from standing committees.
February the 19th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 26, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I'd like to thank everybody for their attention today. It was a long day, and about the only thing I can promise you is another long day tomorrow. So, Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 9 a.m. on Wednesday, February 20th.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, had posted a meeting for tomorrow with one House bill. In view of all the other demands on time, that meeting is canceled. That House bill will be heard on Friday or Monday, depending on the committee workload.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock now. To hear the following Senate File 92, Medical Necessity and Insurance Contracts. I'd also like to make the following announcement, Mr. President, that tomorrow night, Wednesday, February 20th, the Cheyenne Quarterback Club and the Cowboy Joe Club will honor the senior players of the 2007 University of Wyoming football team. The meeting will be at the Holiday Inn, beginning with dinner at 7 p.m. Cost of the dinner is $19. And if you have any questions, contact Mike Brown.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow on S-13 to consider the following bills. Senate File 85, Health Care Reform Pilot Project. Senate File 19, Clandestine Drug Laboratories Remediation. And Senate File 87, Capitol Building Restoration.
Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation Highway Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow upon adjournment. S-14, House Bill 21, Commercial Vehicle Fees, House Bill 59, TANF Amendments.
Senator Vasey, sorry.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tonight, Tuesday, February 19th, upon adjournment about 5 minutes in S-15 to discuss Senate File 93, Child Care Facility Certification.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow, 20 minutes after the noon recess, in S-18 to work Senate File 86, Archaic Price Regulation Repeal, House Bill 66, Revolving Loan Fund Accounts, and House Bill 64, State Auditor Employee Criminal Background Checks.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, I've been asked to let you know that Becky Patton, who is the national president of the American Nursing Association, representing about 3 million nurses, will be at the pasta party to tell you why we are in a nursing crisis today.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, I want to let people know the Arapaho Business Council is sponsoring a reception tonight at the Hitching Post. I think it starts at 6:30. Continues on from there.
Further announcements. The motion is that the Senate shall stand adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Senate is adjourned until 9 a.m.